wrapping the kids out of their coats, the way the babies haven't been born.
Welcome to Teacher Besties, a podcast for teachers. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Kelly. On this week's agenda, we'll talk about a principal in the Bronx that made her teachers throw out their desks. We will talk about our feelings about dress code. And we will discuss a new announcement on testing guidelines from the Obama administration.
It may be years until the day my dreams will match up with my pay.
So do you want to start and tell us a little bit about your week?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm kind of in the thick of grading. I have lots and lots of essays to grade. I'm starting to feel like I'm really getting into the groove of like my style of teaching. My students are starting to get to know me. I don't think anything. Oh, actually, I was observed last week. So I guess.
Oh, yeah. How did that go?
It went perfectly well. Yeah. I wasn't expecting anything except for, you know, like an administrator that honestly wanted to observe me for what I was doing well. And so I went into it feeling like trusted by the administration. I didn't feel like it was going to be punitive or, you know, that they were looking for things that didn't fit my teaching style. And all they asked me to do was to show, you know, that I had like where I was coming from, what I had taught previously, and then to show that like I was going somewhere with it. So just sort of the natural, like you have goals and you've backward mapped it and all that stuff,
which I think that's excellent. And how often are you observed at your new school?
So when you're a new teacher, you are observed, you can be observed up to 3 times, and they actually do it twice in the first semester and then possibly once early in the spring, because they have to like basically tell you if you're going to be asked back by like February or March. So they get them done really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So then, my principal, you know, we had a very good discussion. I felt like we were on the same page. I feel like my experience is appreciated, and you know, I think he saw what I was doing and that there was value in it. So I think all in all, it's exactly what you want from the, evaluation process.
Awesome. That's really, really great.
Yeah. How about, well, what'd you do?
You are now speaking to homecoming royalty.
OMG. Elaborate, please.
I was nominated for a homecoming empress and I won, which is like, it really tickles me because I told you, I think 2 weeks ago, my high school didn't have any dances or homecoming or anything.
Because you guys were and nerds. So
me and another teacher, the emperor, got to drive the homecoming king and queen around in a golf cart during the football game. Aww. And he let me drive. In fact, he asked me to drive.
Excellent.
Which was exciting. I had never driven a golf cart before.
I think if we've learned anything about New Jersey school systems on this podcast, it's that there is zero fun. I mean, it is the no fun league in New Jersey.
But we produce a superior human.
Mm, maybe. To differ. Yeah. Who went to my middle school? Steve Jobs, okay?
Fine. We produce a lot of neuroses and hard workers.
Yeah. I'll take that.
Thank you. Anyway, so that was really fun. But I guess seriously, October's going really well. And I can't believe it's like, I feel like all of a sudden it just disappeared so quickly.
Yeah.
And the school year is really flying by. And now all of a sudden I had to start thinking about finals and planning to make sure I get everything done within the semester.
That's how it happens, right? It's like you got to just get through September, October, maybe a little bit of November, and it really is all downhill from there. Like things are, it's like you can't stop it from happening.
No, but not in a negative downhill way.
No. I mean,
just like it's a rolling stone.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's what I meant to. Was like for those teachers, you know, like you sent me that thing. It was kind of going around Facebook this week about the teachers. It's okay to cry at your desk, new teachers. And, you know, like the bulk of that was that 7 or 8 weeks in is when you realize like, man, this is a hard job and am I totally screwing it up because I'm brand new. And, you know, once you can kind of bust through that 8-9 week phase, you can really get a good thing going.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
So personally, what I did today was I did a toddler swap this weekend.
Oh, what does that mean?
Well, I know I didn't invent it, but I did think it up with my neighbor, and I recommend it to any parents of young children is when you have a neighbor with a child, like about the same age, there is no reason that both of you should be sitting in on a Friday night or a Saturday night. You should just swap so that one night you take their kid and the next night they take your kid.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we did that, and we have these new neighbors that are really nice, and we like them a lot, and they have a daughter who is 1 month older than Sam, and so that's exactly what we did. So it's like two nights in a row, the kids got to play, and one of those nights, we got to go out and actually be human beings.
I mean, I have the option of doing that all the time, but sometimes I choose to just be a couch potato.
Right.
I'm really good at doing that. Although this morning I went out for like really fancy donuts. That was a good time.
Yeah, that's good too. What was your best flavor?
Your least favorite flavor? I really like the banana cream one.
Gross, gross, gross. I'm making a gag face right now for the listeners.
I swear, I think that if you tried bananas again, you would maybe grow to love them.
I mean, I wish I did because they're such a packable fruit. Like, they're the easiest thing to eat, and I'm also always low in potassium, so trust me, I definitely wish I would eat them, but I don't.
I feel like we should just try to sneak it in some food and see what happens.
Okay,
I'll let you know. Or actually, I won't. I'll surprise you. So we're starting with the principal who doesn't want teachers to sit at their desks.
So she decided to throw them all out?
Yeah. So I found it happened on the 18th, and it was in the New York Post. And basically, a Bronx principal decided teachers didn't need their desks and literally made them clear their desks out, put them in the hallways, and the janitors put them out to be picked up.
That is demoralizing. I can't imagine how those teachers would feel.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the end of the story, I guess we could fast forward a little bit, is that eventually, based on, like, she didn't really, I guess, the principal think about logistics and where they're going to sit in grade, because she said that sitting was not very 21st century and teachers don't need to do that. But obviously, we don't just stand up all day and wave our arms. There is some sitting down things that need to be done as a teacher, right?
Well, I mean, also, what about like teachers that are not able-bodied or teachers that are pregnant or teachers who just like, you know, might be tired and need like a 2-minute break to sit down?
Oh, absolutely. And so the superintendent for the district ordered desks to be returned. So it ends positively, but the fact that the principal even did that to begin with is totally crazy.
Yeah, I thought the worst part of the story was that there were students watching their teachers, like, crying as they were throwing their furniture out. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I can imagine that it's just a hostile work environment. And it's just one example of many that I think we've heard in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years of just this sort of administration versus teacher, like, hostility, which really does not make for good work morale. It makes you feel like you're devalued and that like you're untrusted and that, you know, you're not trusted to do a good job. And so instead your things are going to be taken away like you're a child.
Absolutely. And it's really frustrating because I think that we all play for the same team. It's not teachers versus administrators.
Yeah.
It's, hey, we're all in it for the students. And if you're not, then I don't know. I feel like I could be harsh and say maybe find another job that doesn't have as much, like, you don't need to invest as much emotionally in and be a team player.
Well, I mean, I think that I think what's really strange, too, is that when you think about it from an educator's perspective where you are, you know, you've learned time and time again that, like, positive reinforcement is generally what people respond to, and that you're much more likely to get your staff and your students to, like, do what you want them to do if you treat them with a little bit of empathy and, like, you know, humanity. And then, like,
absolutely,
to do that is just, I mean, I just don't know what she thought the results were going to be.
that the, well, I mean, also you learn like through the article that it's actually a really high performing school. And so she said she wanted to raise test scores partially and improve like teaching practices. But mm-hmm. if it's one of the highest performing in an already good district,
right, then it makes
that's
it even
crazy.
It's even harder to raise your test scores when you're like looking at percentiles of a percentage, you know. I would also say, like, I understand the reasoning behind, like, I do know that many people believe, and I wouldn't completely disagree, that most good teachers are continuously circulating the room, and you know, we don't spend a lot of time sitting down. Like, the reality is we're on our feet all day long, especially teachers that are working in a higher needs community or where there are more behavioral issues. Like, you're constantly on your feet. And so to even just take that away from you during your prep period or your break to where, you know, you need those 5 or 10 minutes, like, something that I think people who aren't teachers don't realize is that it's like completely physically draining the same. And it is, you know, it's emotionally draining. It's mentally draining, but it's also physically draining. So all day long, like, there's a reason after the first 2 weeks, you just feel like you can't do anything after 4 o'clock.
Absolutely. I wear a Fitbit, which I kind of hide. But so I track my steps in my classroom, and it's astounding. Sometimes I do more than 2 miles, and my room is really tiny, like within my classroom a day. And it's like, how did that happen?
Wow, that's awesome. I do the same thing. Sometimes I think my students think I'm crazy because I'm constantly pacing around the room, but it's like, it's a habit now. It's like, I don't know how to not walk around my room.
Although recently I've been trying not to walk as much because of, I've talked about it, my more needy students this year, and I'm trying to make them a little more autonomous and not hover and answer all their questions.
Yeah.
So that's been, entertaining for me because I can sit back a little and I hear all the questions and I'm like, don't answer right away.
Yeah.
Give them 2 minutes to figure it out.
I would say when I was pregnant and I had to sit down was when I learned that there were a lot of my students who could do things that in the past I maybe wouldn't have trusted them to do on their own. And now, you know, I'm still kind of always on my feet, but I allow myself to do 5 minutes or, you know, 3 minutes here and there of grading more than I used to.
I would say with the block schedule that I teach on, I think I sit a little more than in shorter periods.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think if I was running around for, what are they, like an hour and 40 minutes?
It's almost like 2 hours.
Yeah, it's almost 2 hours. I don't know how I'd be able to get home at the end of the day.
Yeah. All right. Well, so we agree that that was pretty hostile and not a good way to treat your staff.
No, definitely not.
So, boo on that lady. So, I've wanted us to kind of talk about how we feel about dress codes in general for a while. And so this story just prompted me to be like, hey, let's talk about that this week. So there are some students in Charleston, South Carolina, who are protesting their school's dress code. They believe it's too strict and that it targets girls unfairly. And the way that they are protesting it is by wearing the Scarlet A to school. Some of them wore it for like a day or two, and then there are a few like diehard students that organized it who are just like committed to wearing it until the dress code changes. But basically, I think they were being removed from class and asked to sit in the office until someone could deal with them. And, you know, their point was that they were missing out on their education and that some of the things that they were being told were distracting, were just things that, you know, young women generally wear: shorts when it's hot out, yoga pants when they want to be comfortable, tank tops, the things that we generally see high school students wearing. And frankly, young women, like when we're not at school, I mean, I don't necessarily wear shorts, but I certainly wear yoga pants and also
I'm definitely wearing yoga pants right now.
I think sometimes some of the things that are like the yoga pant thing in schools. I just, sometimes I can't even believe that that's a thing that administrators have decided they want to pick a battle over.
Yeah. So I really love this for two reasons. One, the hashtag is I'm not a distraction.
Nice.
And two, just anything, any kind of protest that's rooted in historical nuances like the Scarlet Letter, just
or litter.
Love it. Not only are they being awesome, but they're also referencing some really great literature, which is kind of amazing.
Also, I have to say the young woman, her name was Reese Fisher, and she was a junior at the school. The young woman who, like, called action on her Instagram to, like, start this whole protest. She was, like, very articulate, and it just, I was very impressed with the way she called them to action, like, the, just the language that she used, and, you know, just... To me, like, when you look at this group of girls, what it says to me is at least they're thinking about the specifics of the dress code and the implications, right? When you're calling a girl out in class and you're saying to them that the reason why they're being called out of class is because they're distracting boys in class and those boys can't learn, but as a punishment, we're going to remove you, from class so you can't learn.
And yeah, that's... frustrating.
Right. So there's that obvious point, but there's also the point that what are we telling those boys? You know, that because a girl in front of you is wearing spaghetti straps, or worse, because you can see her cleavage, that you should sexualize her and not be able to concentrate. Like, you're going to see cleavage for the rest of your life. You might as well get over it.
And there's also, I think, I'm not sure if the girl is talking or someone else, but how dress codes for men are not as regularly enforced, and they can wear, what's it called when they have like the scoopy armpits and the tank top things?
Bro tanks.
I didn't know that was called that. And sagging pants, and that's perceived to be more socially acceptable and not in violation of dress code.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, the number one thing that, like, really annoys me is when I hear female teachers on campus saying that it is our job as the female teachers to point these young women out and talk to them about the dress code because it makes the male teachers feel uncomfortable. And I just think, what the heck message is that sending them on that front? Like... First of all, the female teachers are not going to see you as a young woman. They're going to see you as a sex object. And, like, the male, your male teachers should also see you that way. Like, that just kills me. So, I think you know where I stand on the dress code.
Yeah.
I generally do not, I mean, I tell students from the get-go that I don't, like, I don't do dress code violations, with the exception of super offensive language that I think other students are going to be offended by. So if you're wearing something that says, like, you know, a racial slur on it, then, yeah, I'm going to give you a dress code violation. But I'm not going to judge what you're wearing because that it's, like, sexy or whatever.
Yeah, I also agree with that. I would also perhaps, if someone had something that was like inappropriate drug or alcohol use on their shirt, say something.
Yeah.
For the most part, like, I get, like, teenagers should wear what they want. To an extent, I'm a little more conservative than you, and I think that everyone should dress with a certain level of professionalism when they come to school to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Not because it's a distraction, but I think it's more of like a mental headspace that, like, you're coming dressed appropriately. And you're going to be, in theory, learning a lot that day. And therefore, you should, like, goes along the lines of sitting up straight and just being prepared as, like, getting your head in the game by being dressed appropriately to go to school.
So, for not example, like, don't wear your pajamas and don't bring a blanket and pillow.
Correct.
Okay.
However, like, it doesn't bother me when girls wear their little short shorts. I, however, think... like, man, they're going to be sitting on these plastic chairs all day. Like, don't their legs get stuck? And wouldn't they physically be uncomfortable?
They might be. But, I mean, you know, we've created a culture that basically tells them they should be uncomfortable no matter what they're wearing. So,
I didn't mean it that way.
No, I know you don't mean it that way. But it's the truth, right? I mean,
yeah, I guess it is. I mean, I remember vividly when it was really hot and humid when I was in high school and I used to wear shorts and like I hated when my legs stuck to the back of the chair and then like,
yeah,
like, I don't know. I wore pants because of that.
No, I get that. I would say that my female students who have a problem with the dress code always make the point, which I think is valid, that, you know, they challenge the adults in their life to go to a clothing store that is marketed towards their age group and find something in there that is not totally violating the dress code, particularly in summer when they show up in our classrooms.
Oh, I completely agree.
You know, like finding shorts for themselves is really hard. And like, it's hard. It's a little harder for us to relate, I think, because we're going to stores that are marketed towards, you know, a 30-year-old woman who is a young professional. And so their shorts are a little bit longer.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you go into Forever 21 and it's pretty hard, which is why I don't go into Forever 21 anymore.
Hey, we were in there kind of recently.
Yeah, but only for like select items, like a cover up for the pool.
Or a jumpsuit.
Or a jumpsuit, which you're not going to spend $100 on at Anthropology.
Correct. But I think that I could only imagine, like, I've never been to a school that doesn't have some sort of dress code policy in place. And I'd be curious to see what would happen if those things were completely eliminated.
Well, here's what I'm going to say. I don't think it would change much because I have a student right now who comes to school on a pretty regular basis. A male student, white, comes to school wearing a shirt that says, like, Cracker Knows Best or something like that. Like, essentially referring...
Is it a reference to Uncle Cracker, the
musician?
No,
no, no. It's a reference to being a cracker, as in a white slur. As in, like, he's pretty proud of being a white person and sometimes has some pretty questionable ethics. That kid, I'm pretty sure, has never been called into the office for a dress code violation of wearing something that's, like, you know, offensive. However, many of my, like, outstanding students that are female have been called into the office for wearing shorts that are a little too short.
I don't know if my school is enforcing that. I mean, I personally am not enforcing anything.
Yeah.
Unless a kid has an actual hood on. I don't even know if that's part of the dress code. I just like to be able to see that they're not listening to music under their hoodies.
Yeah, I always tell them that they can like stick their ears out like an elf if they want to wear their hood.
So the last thing we're going to talk about is an article that came out yesterday, or an announcement, I guess, that came out yesterday.
Yeah, big announcement from the White House.
Which is really exciting that the Obama administration made a new announcement about testing guidelines and, okay, we'll be positive first, that they want to reduce the number of tests that students take, not just like, hey, this is a test on chapter two, but standardized tests. Mm-hmm. And they want them to be meaningful and to serve a purpose rather than just over testing our students, which we know happens a lot.
Yeah. The line that stood out for me from the announcement was that, the administration was saying that these sorts of standardized tests should not take up more than 2% of classroom time.
Did you do the math? How much time is 2% of classroom time?
Oh, you bet I did the math. So
did you?
Uh-huh. So,
good for you. Tell.
The math on a 180-day school year would be between 3 and 4 days. We all know that the SBAC test takes at least 2 days. It might take a third day depending on like if they pull kids out for certain things.
Wait, is that a whole day or are you talking about a period in a day?
I'm talking about an entire day. So
okay.
3 entire school days, maybe 3.5 depending on if based on a 180-day school year. I've had years where my students were asked to take some sort of standardized test, and I'm counting the new SBAC, the PSAT, district-mandated tests, and writing performance assessments, and I calculated between 18 to 22 English periods So let's say 18 to 22 days in my classroom. So that was 12% of my classroom time. I did the math. 12%.
Oh God, I'm proud of you.
I know. I don't do math. 12% of my classroom time was spent just taking those tests in some of the worst years. And I mean, I can't even imagine how much time I spent preparing them for that. I would imagine.
So I've been a little more fortunate. Mm-hmm. I teach all the classes, honestly, until last year I've taught, did not require a standardized test in them. And that's because I teach predominantly freshmen and seniors.
Yeah.
And so I haven't really had to do anything. Last year was the first year that I had to proctor the SBAC, and I did the math component in my classroom. I think I've talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
I was really upset because I didn't realize that I had to spend a day explaining something about suspended fountains, which I was not even sure what that was. Another teacher had to explain that to me because apparently that was a big deal to understand for the test. I don't think it was on there.
Wow.
I mean, it might have been, but when I was, no one mentioned that to me. Mm-hmm. In fact, a kid was like, "Why did we talk about that?" And I was like, "I don't know." And so that was a week of my instruction. So I can only imagine how frustrating it is to an English teacher to incorporate all those assessments into their class.
Yeah, and when English and math particularly complain about these things, part of the complaint is, yes, our subjects are tested, and those, you know, whether or not they say that we are being measured professionally based on those tests, we are. Like, it's implicit. It's there. The administration sees how the kids in all of your classes did, and they might make some allowances depending on how tracked your school is, whether or not you have AP kids mixed in or whatnot. But, you know, you are judged based on those tests. So there's an added pressure. But it's really about how much time is taken away from your other, you know, other things that you might think are valuable. I would say a couple of years ago when we really started doing Common Core testing and working in a mm-hmm. district that mandated every 6 weeks that you gave the same writing assessment. And those were quality writing assessments. I will say that outright. But what it meant was I didn't give a single teacher-generated writing assessment, I don't think, that year because I didn't have the time to grade them and grade the other ones. So basically, yeah. All of the writing assessments were coming from the district. The kids have less buy-in because they feel like they're coming from a machine. Even though they impact their grade, they still have less buy-in to them. They sort of don't understand that correlation that, like, oh, you know, it's standardized, but it's still going on my grade. And then, I mean, I've taken out entire units in the last couple of years to make way for some of this stuff. So I think it's just we have to decide what we're prioritizing.
Yeah, and I guess I'm really curious to see, one, I mean, I know the Secretary of Education is stepping down, so how thoroughly will this plan be implemented and when?
Yeah, I was actually really interested in that if this announcement was made because of Arne Duncan stepping down, but
I'm not sure. And two, like, how are they going to decide what are the meaningful tests versus the ones that are perceived to be a waste of time?
Yeah, and if they're going to stick to the 2%, the meaningful test is going to be the SBAC because that's the one that the state's paying for, and that's exactly how much time it's going to take.
I mean, well, then they should really also look at lobbyists and who's paying for the SBAC and then think about that.
Right. College board.
A lot.
But, yeah, I mean, I'm not against Common Core. I think it's really valuable. I think that the standards are pretty well written. I think that when teachers align their goals and teach specific skills per grade level, that's really, really valuable. I just think that when we start standardizing to the point that all the kids have to take the same test, especially when it starts becoming like an every 4 to 8 weeks type thing, not only are the kids under a lot of pressure, it's just, you know, it really impacts what they're learning because you have to teach them to a certain degree to that test. Like, kids need to understand testing language and they have to understand prompts and yeah. All that stuff has to be taught to them.
And it kind of takes the fun out of learning. And when you do that, then you have like a whole group of students who are not excited about literature or solving math problems or like figuring out why history is actually important and not just a waste of your time.
Yeah, and especially those kids that don't feel successful on those tests, when they see them coming at them constantly, they sort of just, you know, give up on everything else too. So
I think that would have been me if I was in high school today. Like, I wasn't good at taking those tests.
Yeah.
I had like a major panic every single time.
Yeah, I wasn't, I don't know that I was great. I wasn't great at multiple choice. I was always pretty strong at writing. You know, I always felt pretty confident there, but I definitely was not a multiple choice test taker. I could justify things like in all kinds of ways.
I surprisingly was very good at the math part.
You're always rubbing your math skills in my face.
Well, sometimes, every now and then, I have a stupid math question. But for the most part, I feel pretty confident in my basic algebra and geometry and pre-calc.
You should get a math credential.
I tried, what was it, like, it must have been 6 years ago now. I was like, I'm going to go in and take the test cold and see what happens.
Ooh.
And, yeah, so I missed each of them by 2 questions.
Oh. Pretty good.
And so, but it was, some of it was really hard, like a lot of like really in-depth theory of mathematics that I didn't learn
as a non-math major. And you did the entire test in one day?
There's three, well, in California, the CSET has 3 parts. There's like an algebra, geometry, and then like an upper level.
Yeah.
And so I did 2 of them. I did algebra and geometry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Hmm. But I really like algebra, but I think I would only teach algebra if I actually taught middle school.
Oh, yeah, you would not teach middle school.
And I would not do that. So I don't know. It's fun to think about, but yeah. I think I'll stick with my history English credential.
Sometimes I wish I had a history credential, not because I want to teach like actual history classes, but because I wouldn't mind being able to teach like some of the elective type classes that some schools have, you know?
Which most don't offer anymore because of funding.
Well, that's very true. But I mean, my school kind of does. They have some pretty cool sounding classes. Like,
for example,
there's one that the kids were talking about, like they're talking about population and stuff like that the other day. And it was seniors though. So it was like really advanced stuff. And I'm trying to remember what the course was called. But it wasn't gov or econ. It was like a senior level class where they were talking about populations and like how they had like a short answer question that was like, how does a decline in population like affect something something? I don't know. It sounded amazing.
You know how much I love population studies.
Oh, I know. And like the kids were super into it too. And when I asked them, like they were all about it. So
if I could teach a whole class on that, I would. I would also teach a food history class. And something specifically about the Cold War.
I think the one upside that I've seen so far of teaching at a school that is 2,500 kids is that there is sometimes still opportunities for them to take electives that are like core subject matter electives. And I think that's because like it's not hard to round up like 35 or 70 kids in a school of 2,500, you know?
Uh-huh,
whereas
yeah.
like the smaller you go, the harder it is to specialize in something.
Absolutely. And also it's just a matter of finding like full-time.
Yeah. Like there's a huge staff.
FTEs or whatever.
Right. Well, we got a little bit off on a tangent, but,
yeah, sorry. I got excited.
It's okay. Population is so exciting.
It really truly is.
No, I know you like it sounded fascinating, but all right, well, hopefully it'll be very interesting to see if this announcement actually makes an impact in our classrooms, how long it takes to trickle down, and, you know, whether or not they're serious about this.
So let's say goodbye.
Okay. You can send us an email at teacherbesties@gmail.com.
Or follow
us
on
Tumblr at teacherbestiespodcast.tumblr.com. And you can please, please find us and subscribe on iTunes to Teacher Besties Podcast. Make sure it's the one that has the actual logo, and it's like Teacher Besties apostrophe podcast. And that's it.
Talk to the neighbors and tip my cap on a little rug barely on.